Past decade has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product, because we use only FDA supervised facilities to manufacture for us, because what we say is in them is in them, because they work, because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Everyone's a winner, baby.
We're back at the races. A little less than 90 minutes, make it about 80 minutes to close out the two-week run at Churchill Downs. And for years and years, one of our favorite visits is with Satish Sanan. For so long, Satish providing insights to all of you in the Our Industry segments, exposing, you know, part of the game that from ownership and breeding and from a lot of the intricacies. Satish taught me so much, and it's a pleasure usually to say good morning, but we're going to have to wait a second. Case, the office, his desk number perhaps? Instead, is that and you never know when he's on. Okay, now let me send you. Well, I'll send you the. You still have the old where we used to call him at his desk. All right, give me. Let's see. Oh, for goodness sakes. All right, bear with us, folks, while I try to send. Maybe he's on. He might be on a. He might be on a call. All right, here's what you do. Why don't you try Duke in this spot then, and we'll get Satish right afterward. How about that? All right, maybe Duke. It's an hour. It's been an hour, so Duke might be ready for us as well. And I'll send Satish a message in the meantime. All right, I'll tell him we'll circle back to him. It'll be a pleasure at that point to welcome Satish. Meanwhile, as Casey lines up Duke, getting what a wonderful reaction to the crazy concept, the Big Four that came out the other day with Gary Palmisano Jr. and with James. We got 200 entrants already. So you've got, 10:40. So you got until 2 o'clock. So you got about 3.5 hours. exactly 3.5 hours, in fact, to put up the entry. And it's big credit to our man at the guys at Gapman, which is our web dev people at the website, and John Gapman and Tom Sokolowski. They have been, when it came to this, they put it together in less than 24 hours. And when it came to the Breeders' Cup wagering guide we put together, they did that in no time at all as well. So it really impressed with the team. Speaking of impressed, how about 1260 on Powder River for Norm Cassie, winning the first race, and 6-4, 2-1, and we're underway at Churchill Downs on Oaks Day. All right, well, Case, you work on that, and I'm going to do this, and going to turn around, and I just, Kevin Kirstein asked me what time, and I'm going to see if he can come over, and we'll fill him in as you work on Satish and Duke. So let me get KK over here, because I wanted his final opinions, and, of course, he was over on the backstretch this morning as well. All right, so it's not unusual that you a little bit of slight surprise as we try to fill out the rest here. Let me know, Case, if you get either one. All right. I put up as well. I put up the changes. I've only got to make one. I think I've only got to make one adjustment to. I've got to make one adjustment at noon when we get off the air, because the 11 in the nightcap. But otherwise, the way we laid things out for the Oaks analysis is stable. All right. So I just got to make some adjustments to the late pick five, the last pick five, and the last pick four, and adjustment to the 13th from a win standpoint. That the horse that I put in as the likely in that 13th, that was the horse from that Mike Welch was hinting at yesterday, it seems. Kalen's Charisma, the Mott. So and yeah, it's funny. And with the scratch of Altered Shot, I'm really not sure. There's a couple of firsters in that nightcap we may have to consider. All right. Well, so be it. Well, you know what, Case? In that case, why don't you then? We'll just move everything, dial everything back, and see if Nick wants to get started now. It's only 15 minutes early for Nick Tamaro. All right. Yeah, that'll work. That'll work, I think, assuming that Nick doesn't have anything that he's tied on with. No. I hate wasting even this 5 minutes, frankly. I haven't talked about the presence here. It right now, in terms of the, at least in terms of media coverage, it's not much different. I suppose there's still people that'll be here between now and you know, early afternoon, but it's more than September, but not a lot more. It's a lot closer to September in terms of media presence than, you know, a normal derby. What did Darren say? He said about 1,200, and it's usually over 2,000. And there were only 400 or 500 in September, but it's very comfortable right now in here in terms of in terms of how many people are on hand. So, we'll see. Certainly, I can tell you one thing. Outside, I haven't been out since I came in. Usually by about 2:30, 3 o'clock, things start to, it's a later, not unusual. There's people that are coming in from out of town, too, and they don't get to Louisville till today. All right, well, nobody's where they're supposed to be or where you thought they might be. And I'll rely on Case to bring forth your next candidate. All right. Yeah. And now if Kevin Kirstein right there at the break, I would have dragged him over and had him on now. And instead, you know what'll happen? He'll come over later and we'll be stacked up again with everybody. So I don't know what to tell you about Satish. So, all right. Well, yeah. The rest of the weekend here with the rest of the weekend from the other venues that I haven't brought up. I gave you the New York action, and there is actually a stake today. They're running with the flat out today at Belmont. The mile and 3/8 stake. And tomorrow, yeah, tomorrow's good with the Sheepshead Bay and the Fort Marcy and the Westchester, and of course Westchester being used for a prep toward the Met Mile. And Mr. Buff trying to get that elusive graded stake win. All right, there we go. What do you got, Case? Okay, Kevin. Kev just said now he's tied up outside. Papo, there we go. Papo Morales joining us. Perfect. That'll be perfect. That'll take us to the top. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Papo, how'd it go yesterday?
It went well. We fired right through the stakes races on the Oaks card and was done in about 20 minutes, just using a couple filters and really put me onto some horses that I didn't have marks on, so I'm going to have to fold them in. And I know I've got that turf listed as firm right now, but I've got my doubts about that. So I'm going to move up some horses that I feel will excel on good turf. So it's going to be very interesting this afternoon, Steve.
Well, give a couple of plays then, and before we talk about Derby.
Sure. On today's card or tomorrow's?
Well, today, quickly, if you've obviously Oaks and any anything else you think from a price standpoint, particularly.
Yeah, I mean, Creative Early is the eighth race today at Churchill, where She Dares the Devil looks like a lot of people will be singling her. I was going to try to beat her with Ibutante before, and just on my filter when I ran it through, Ibutante was just slight bit faster, and I think she'll be every bit of 6-1. I think Dunbar Road's going to take a lot of money, and so I'm going to try to get Ibutante involved, and I will use her in the multis. And then I'll give you a bomb that formed a win like if the turf is indeed good. If you go to that 10th race today, the 5.5 furlong turf sprint, Classy John for Dallas Stewart.
Yeah, there's a few people Yep, there's a few people that like that horse. Just
yeah, Dallas
on straight handicapping.
Not known as a turf trainer, but you know, horse did nothing really on dirt and put him on the turf and ran well. That last race at Fairgrounds, I think was an underrated performance. Actually, got passed a little bit coming down the lane and re-rallied. So 20-1, you know, that's a price I'm going to have involved in everything, basically underneath and in the multi still.
Interesting. It's you know, my tendency on the turf sprints because they you know they sometimes are you know they seem confounding. I try to get narrow if I can, and you know try to latch on to the best you know the best pace horse and the best late runner, or you know mid pack type and just try to survive it. You know, because if you start to let the thing muddy and muddle, it you know you'll end up needing seven or eight horses and I remember having this conversation years ago with John White about turf sprints, and I've tried to make and I've been successful sometimes and there's been some agonizing beats so but you sort of take your chance and you know hope for the best on the multi side.
Yeah, and I mean not if you don't want to use a particular horse in the multis, then obviously you know a nice win bet on a horse that fits is always can be a nice saver too. So that's the way I'm going to kind of attack
nice.
That. But do you want to do Derby? Or you want to do some of the undercard stuff for tomorrow?
Start with Derby quickly, and then if you want to jump around.
Sure. Nothing to, I mean, everything on Form to Win kind of lines up. It had Essential Quality ranked one. Hot Rod Charlie was ranked two. And I'm afraid Hot Rod Charlie's going to be taking a ton of money. So I doubt that 8-1 is going to hold up. And actually, Highly Motivated fit. And I still have my reservations for a win contender, but I'll have him prominent underneath. I don't know if his 10-1 is going to hold either. But, yeah, nothing too creative. I mean, it was Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie. And, I mean, Known Agenda was in the mix. And I think Known Agenda is going to float up, actually. So, you know, I think there's only four win contenders, Hot Rod Charlie, Essential Quality, Rock Your World, and who was my other one? Essential Quality, Rock Your World, Hot Rod Charlie, and Known Agenda. Yeah, so no strong opinion on either of those. I'll probably just pay attention to the odds and bet the highest one because I don't think they're separated by all that much. And then I'll get creative underneath. I will say this. It seems like everybody's trying to find the price horse to get in the mix. And a lot of people put those price horses in third and fourth. I'm going to try to find a price horse and put it in second and hope that, you know, some of the big players don't show up. So that's how I'll attack the Derby.
Well, and you know that's funny that you mentioned that because when you go, one exercise that's worth doing is going through Derby charts. And I've got obviously years and years and literally decades worth, and I've started to kind of pare back and only look at about the previous 8, 10, 12 years, just because of, the changes in the game and, the nature of it. And invariably, you see that. I mean, you see the prices that for many years that were, the third or fourth types, the bigger prices have absolutely made their way further up the chart. I mean, we had that long run of favorites that everybody kind of attributes to the to the change in the point system. But it is notable if you don't limit your price key to third and fourth. Don't be afraid to even to back wheel them, put them second with all the win contenders. I mean, there's plenty of people that'll back wheel with all in this race and make scores.
Yeah, it's all about planning and preparation, and then and then pay attention to the tote board, because there are some horses that are gonna get lost a little bit. We see it every year, and got to be able to capitalize on those opportunities.
How about some undercard action, Popo?
Yeah, the 10th. I know Colonel Liam. I mean, it's going to be a hard favorite to beat, but the 11th, the old Forester. I'm going to try to beat Colonel Liam with Count Again. I like Count Again when I did the pen and paper handicapping, and when I ran through Form to Win, he was right there. So I'm going to try to, definitely use him in the multis, and then maybe just play a straight exact of those two. Backing up further, no strong opinion in the 10th, other than I think Tap to Win may be able to wire. There's not a ton of speed, I don't think. And that last race at Tampa, he could have run a lot faster. He was geared down, turning for home. So interesting that Cassie goes here. And then, of course, you got Mind Control. But I just don't know what the pace factor is going to look like. So maybe Tap to Win can get loose. The Pat Day Mile, nothing too clever in here. Although, Form to Win had Prevalence involved, and he's got to run back to that maiden win, and he hasn't. You know, he ran okay in that allowance win at Gulfstream, and I don't know what happened in the Wood Memorial. I know looks like he missed some works going in, but now I got to use him in the multi, Steve, just because he fits on Form to Win, and then the 7th. Well, we don't really have to talk about that one. It looks like the Mean will most likely wire. And then the 6th race, the Churchill Distaff Mile. Sofel is interesting. But once again, I got to figure out what the turf course is rated and whether the rating.
The turf is going to be firm. And it's listed as firm now. And certainly for Saturday,
okay.
Everybody's so worried about the status of the turf course. It's a sand-based course. It drains fast. And the course is fine.
So you're saying it's firm now? You believe it's firm now?
They calling it firm. It's listed as firm. Absolutely. We didn't get nearly as much rain. I mean, we had a deluge in a short period, but we did not get the protracted, and even from an inch standpoint, they were calling for an inch and a half, and it ended up being less than a half an inch. The turf is firm. There might be some spots where there's some give, but any horse that runs on the grass is not going to have a problem with that course.
Okay. Well, it would be nice if we got stick measurements out there. I know Keeneland uses those, and that helps give us a better assessment. But, I'll take your word for it. If you say it's firm, then I'll take that. So I guess, if it's firm, then, Doc Stormy's definitely a player in that race.
She'll be fine. Yeah, she should be fine.
So nothing clever in that race, Steve.
Nice. Papa, last question on the Derby, actually. Go back for 1 second. What did you do for distance settings out of curiosity? Because I played with a whole bunch.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, I just looked at 9 to 10, and they didn't really have many starts.
Exactly.
Basically 1 and 2 starts apiece. I mean, if you just want to factor in all their times, it had, this will be goofy. It had Rock Your World first with 3 starts, obviously. It had Highly Motivated second, and the horse that it put in third was Helium. At 50 to 1, and actually, in the try, I'm probably going to include Helium because I like that damn sire. Was it Victory Gallop or no Thunder Gulch? Yeah, I like Thunder Gulch for a damn sire. So asking a lot with the layoff and everything, but we're not talking about a win contender here. We're talking about a horse that needs to get up for third or fourth, and strictly on pedigree. With that damn sire, I think he could do it.
Nice. And I can tell you, for those that have, if you haven't watched the 7 to 8 o'clock video presentation from Churchill, Helium looks terrific. It's strictly a matter of whether you believe, this extended approach, has a merit. And I can... the only horse that we have to go by on that is Danza, who actually ran very well for Pletcher when he tried it from Tampa all the way to Derby. So, but from a from a day-to-day, morning-to-morning basis, he's bright and sprightly. I got no problem with those that said they want to use helium, and certainly Julian Leperu knows his way around this oval. So I can see those that want to include him. And he's going to be, you know, he's one of the most overlooked, obviously, in this entire field. Well, Papa, I want to appreciate it. I appreciate the seminar yesterday, and also, of course, Form to Win sponsoring this fun Pick Four. So still time until about 2:10 to join in, and we'll do some recapping next week.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve. Appreciate it also, and just remind everyone to have fun out there today, and you know, don't be afraid if the horse that you like, the odds are a lot higher than you expected. If you still like them, you should actually probably bet them stronger in those instances.
No doubt.
So just trust your opinion. Have fun. Don't get down on yourself if you don't hit the first two. It's only going to take one to make the weekend.
Exactly. It's exactly right. It's a lot of the same things we talk about during Breeders' Cup weekend. It's those kinds of fields, those kinds of pools. Papo Morales, everybody. Papo Core 1, formtowin.com. And KK comes in from outside after the horses headed out for the second. And they're actually on the way. They're rolling in the second. KK, here we are. It's underway, the weekend.
We're underway. You had, 30 hours of radio over 2 weeks? You're down to your final hour, and I'm honored to be on for your final hour here. And I heard you talking with Papo about the turf course to start the broadcast.
Yes.
And, you know, it was interesting. So I talked to our track superintendent, Jamie Richardson, early this morning. And actually on the turf course, you know, we are putting in a $10 million renovation over the summer to the turf course. And so you know, it hasn't been redone since the mid-80s, and so it's just old technology on our turf course. However, whenever we get rain, it's almost better than our current irrigation system that we have, and so the turf course was pretty firm for the last couple of days. It actually needed a bit of a drink, and so I walked on the course this morning, very firm. It's good to go. The first turf race gets underway around 12:45 p.m. Eastern time, so plenty of time to bake in that sun. Just great track conditions. Can't, you know, give our maintenance team enough credit because they got this track to be fast and firm for the two biggest days of racing in the world.
Well, and you got a high sun, you had wind too, you had a nice breeze, and that goes a long way to, you know, to drying out a turf course. But it all starts with the fact that we didn't get as much rain as projected.
And this track, too, our dirt track, dries incredibly well. It's one of the best drying surfaces, I think, in the entire country. And so I think the track will play, you know, pretty fair throughout the 2 days of racing here. We saw it play pretty fair over the last couple of days when we started racing on Saturday for opening night of the spring meet. And how about Dallas Stewart getting up in the second race at 32-1?
Distorted Verve, and obviously with that name, when you hear the Verve name, you know that it's Mr. Fipke, and of course the jacket, easy to identify, the white and blue and yellow and the diamond, and this one shakes things up. Distorted Verve was 12-1, Louis Saez aboard, and yeah, this was a maiden group of fillies and mares going 1 mile. The most important part about that, actually, I'm looking at the splits, 22-3, 45-3, 110 flat, 122 flat, 135-2. She came from well out of it. So those that were worried, you know, because when you do get rain here and the track gets sealed, then gets reopened, and they try to fluff it up. But still, not unusual for a post-wet weather to provide you with a track that can be speed favoring, but that was an encouraging, very encouraging from a standpoint of horses coming either, you know, from off the pace or anywhere if they're good enough.
Not for my pick five.
Not for mine either, and pick four. This is going to knock out. That is a bit of a longer shot on the board by a wide margin, and I'm actually not sure why. You know, there were three horses at 12-1. And I'm not really sure why this one got ignored. I I looked at her when I was writing things up this morning, or last night.
Yeah, not for me. I singled a seven there on my plays. But, you know, oh well. Try to get Wesley Ward his 1,999th win. Got the 2,000 sign printed in my office just in case for this weekend.
But did you have it? Did you have it out there?
Didn't have it yesterday, but we got it today.
So
just in case.
I can't remember. Does Wesley, is that his only? No, he's got more.
Oh, yeah. And he's like the king, maybe in the Derby.
It's like a carried away. Okay, now you're getting carried away.
Hey.
This is always kind of a funny day because the morning activities, they abate. Horses did come out, though, this morning and early. The training period for everybody around here ends at 8 a.m., so it's not like a normal morning. Anything back there today, everything copacetic with everybody?
Everyone seems all good, Steve, and, you know, it was one of those. It's your last day leading up into, you know, the biggest race of these horses' careers. And so trainers always have their different type of training pattern. Some trainers like to just jog their horses for their last training session to a race. Some trainers like to actually, you know, almost do like a two-minute lick into a training session. Brad Cox's essential quality was moving at a pretty solid pace. I think Brad had him on his watch at 220 and change going around for about a mile and an eighth. And so, all the horses looked well. We've seen throughout the last couple of weeks with the horses that have really strived and thrived in their training. You mentioned Helium on your last segment. He looks good. Is he fast enough? Probably not, but he certainly looks good training. Mandaloon looks the picture. Midnight Bourbon, again, another horse that looks phenomenal. And so, it's sort of the calm before the storm tomorrow, and some trainers have their own unique methods of what to do, and then others actually will do a more rigorous training session, but nothing too crazy today or nothing that would draw a negative light to me.
What was your final your final analysis? Any change from when we talked last week?
I'm on Obesos as my – my selection.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year's Derby is its essential quality, and I think everyone else, and that everyone else group, there's probably a solid group of 10 that are very equally matched. And so if you don't want to take 2-1 on essential quality after Mattress Mack dumps his couple of million in the wind pool on essential quality, who could win this race just off of talent alone? We always want to, at least me, I want to look at a horse that's on the up and up in their careers, and I think we haven't seen the best of Obesos yet. I don't think trainer Greg Foley has gotten to the bottom of him. And so I think, you know, taking a 20-1 shot, and this year's Kentucky Derby especially, is, kind of the number that you want to be at if you're trying to beat essential quality. Now, will I use him in my essential quality, in my exotics? Of course. But a horse like Obesos, I think, shows enough improve that it would be a good price for gamblers to take in that 15-20-1 range of horses if you don't want to use essential quality.
One thing to mention on Jim McInvale's bet, he's going to put the money in through the windows. And it's a significant point because it will, to the tune of $200,000, go into, you know, the horseman account, essentially, to, you know, toward purses. So as opposed to doing it on his online account where it wouldn't have that same impact, Mac is, and that's just $2 million, it might end up being a little bit more, but for, you know, basically 10%, the $200,000 will go, you know, benefit the horseman. So that's another gesture that gives you the idea of Mac's largesse.
He's the gift that keeps on giving, yeah. I think, to the gambling world. I mean, his philanthropy work in Texas is phenomenal, and then obviously, you know, he's the picture to big game gamblers out there, and we're gracious enough for him to partner with us for the Derby weekend, and great to see him on Saturday.
The final Oaks thought.
I think Malathat's a freak. I don't think we've seen the best of her yet, even though she'll be 2-1, 5-2-ish. You know, she's a single in my Oaks Old Forester Derby pick 3, which is one of my favorite bets of the year. And so I'm keying her in that bet and keying her over a few horses in the Oaks Derby double as well.
Who'd you use in the Forester?
Colonel Liam, all the way. Pletcher, 10.
Hmm.
And keep hitting repeat on the windows.
hold your finger down. All right. Anything else that you're going to play?
I'm going to play a lot of things, Steve, but I just want to say from Churchill Downs and our publicity department, we're very grateful for you to be here for the last 2 weeks and cover our meet and cover our races. And, the publicity is great and you do a great job. And so thank you from Darren Rogers and myself for being here, and can't wait to have you back anytime.
Well, it's always, as I've said, one of my favorite periods of any year. And, even though we didn't get a chance to do our normal January, February, March, April, including NHC and Vegas and California and Oakland and Florida trip, et cetera, New Orleans. I knew, when I booked the hotel this was going to be the opening salvo of the 2021 campaign when it comes to, broadcasting around. We'll get to Haskell and so forth and Belmont. And I'm not sure what's going on in Baltimore. Somebody told me that there's protocols now that are Maryland related as opposed to just Pimlico. But so we got to see about that. I haven't. It's been the busy week.
The most difficult thing, I think, is this is the first time I've worn a tie since the 2019 derby. So I'm in my office trying to tie this tie. I don't remember how to tie the tie. So it took about 7 or 8 tries. I finally got it done.
That's funny. I warned everybody. I told them try on your suits and on any pants and whatever you're going to wear. Make sure stuff still fits the way you thought it did the last time you tried it on.
It's between the COVID weight plus my wife when she was pregnant during COVID, the pregnancy weight, because I obviously have to gain the same amount too. And so it's not a good wardrobe situation for the next 2 days.
Yeah, I love it. And finally, Nick Tamaro joining us. Finally, Kevin Kirstein with us. And the most important question maybe of the whole weekend. We happy with Smith? We happy with the first round selection last night?
As an Eagles fan, I'm always going to be sort of on the pessimistic side.
Jesus.
However,
how pessimistic can you be of a Heisman Trophy winner?
Look, you came into my office yesterday and you said, got to trust Howie Roseman, got to trust the tribe.
Trust the process.
Yeah, trust the process, trust the tribe, and so we'll see what happens.
that was not a glowing endorsement of the Heisman Trophy winner in wearing green.
Look, last season is too fresh on my mind.
Wow. See, your problem is you didn't have to go through Jerry Williams and Eddie Kayat. So you have no idea what suffering is.
I don't think I could have laughed.
Somehow I did. Johnny did. And the rest of us, the Eagle faithful. Kevin Kirstein, everybody. The baby was here the other day. Baby is adorable.
Thank you. I mean, she's the newest racing degenerate. She's ready to go to the windows already.
I saw her. What horse? Who was she with? She was on the backstretch.
She was with one of the outsiders. She was with Sconson on the backside.
No, Sconson?
Yeah.
How about that?
So Sconson, tomorrow's Derby City Distaff.
How about that? All right.
Pulling the upset against Kameen.
Well, let's not get carried away. Kevin Kirstein, everybody. KK, thanks for everything.
Happy Derby.
Kevin Kirstein, everybody. And turn our attention. Got about 40 minutes or more, a little less, 45. And Nick Tamaro back with us. Nick, good morning. Nick, where is he? I could have sworn I heard him. Case?
Yeah, no, I promise I'm here.
Okay, there we go.
Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm exactly where I always am at this time after the 2 weeks. I start to reach for the wire, as we say. Nick, we went over the Friday action yesterday, and any adjustments, anything? It looks like this track is certainly fair based on the late running win just now by Distorted Verb.
Yeah, first race as well. Saw winner come from last. So, yeah, looks like everything's pretty normal. The track's fast, no surprise, and the turf held up well yesterday. So everybody, the numerous newly minted meteorologist that let me know on Twitter that the turf was going to be very soft on Saturday. They can recalibrate their thinking a little bit, but I think things are pretty normal, all things considered, and we're ready for it. It's time.
I'm just looking to see when's our first turf race is the 5th. And they're going a mile and an eighth too, so you should be able to get a chance to see how they're traveling, essentially. We got two more on the dirt here coming up. First level allowance sprinting for 3-year-old fillies, and then the fillies are going to go long on the main. You know what? Now, Nick, I actually am appreciative of this pick 5 and pick 4 that were shoved in starting on the 3rd and 4th race.
Because you're dead like everybody else.
Yeah, and you know, it's not... what's funny about that Dallas horse? It's not like she was okay. I mean, I looked, and it's funny because of what Sid Fernando has taught us about the way Mr. Fipke names the horses. And so when I handicapped the on Wednesday, Thursday, and I saw I saw a distorted verb, and what he does is if he pairs verb, whoever he pairs her with, let's say he goes to Perfect Soul, then it'll be Perfect Verb. He does it. The horses are named by Fipke so that he can, so that he knows who the mating was. That there's no other cleverness involved. It's done so he keeps track of all of his horses. And this was second off the layoff, her second start as a 3-year-old, and she was stretching out from 6.5 to 7. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for horses. Think back to one of our goofy wins with Minute Mouse. She had never, she had never gone long, and she was stretching out first time, and she wins at 30-1. I mean, that is the kind of formula you look for price horses.
Well, right, and I mean, look at who was 9-5. I mean, that Shug McGahee horse is terrible. So, I mean, it goes to show you, and I think there's virtually no angle to be betting that horse whatsoever. I was 4 deep and didn't use the 9. No surprise. But if I had known the 9 was going to be 32-1,
right,
I probably would have been slightly more interested.
Yep.
I mean, I was with everybody else using the overly clever Wesley Ward horse changing surfaces and McPeak, who couldn't seal the deal, and Kizzy B. So, yeah, just kind of a ugly-looking group on paper, and it sort of played out that way and unsurprisingly went to the longest shot on the board. So, which followed up a 5-1 winner in the first leg, so everybody's looking at a very, very hearty pick 5 payoff as of right now. I think the pick 3 to Australasia, who shockingly is not 4-1, despite the morning line, is $1,100 for 2, and that's the
wow,
cheapest one. So, yeah, if you're alive in the pick 5, best of luck. It's going to be, it should be a very, very lucrative remainder of the sequence. I will say that I like Temple quite a bit in the 5th. I'm, of course, knew that Segoy would come out if the opening verse stayed on turf. And so it slows the pace down a little bit. Ever Dangerous looks dangerous again back in Kentucky after that big win in the Bryan Station last year. But I thought the Temple, there was a lot to like about him cutting back in distance and kind of an interesting race there before you get into the stakes part of the program.
Let's wrap up Friday and put it away. Any other final thoughts about the Oaks?
No, nothing groundbreaking. I mean, I'm still going to mainly use the two favorites, two of the favorites, I should say, Malathot and Search Results. There's been a couple of people I've discussed this race with, and they just were incredulous that I am dismissive of the Fairgrounds Oaks horses, and I'm just not a particularly big fan of either Clarier or Travel Column. I understand they're both training really well, and all of these various things, and they both run well at the track, but I just think those are a lesser group of horses from top to bottom, and I think that the likes of Malathot and Search Results and even Pass the Champagne are just better than than what they've seen on a regular basis. I think it'll be interesting now to see how the pace plays out with Ava's Grace coming out. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. It does work in the favor of horses like Search Results, Travel Column, Pass the Champagne. I'm figuring that one of those three will end up on the lead. I guess it could end up being Travel Column because Giroux is generally pretty aggressive, and certainly he and Brad Cox know how to win this race and what kind of trip would really give their filly the best shot. So that opening furlong or two is going to be very telling, but I don't know. I the more I watch that Ashlyn, the more I watch Malathot win the Demoiselle last year, she just seems like that steady grinding type that as long as she gets at least a halfway decent trip, she's going to be very tough.
Let's turn to Saturday, and we did do some of the obvious, the Derby and some of the feature elements when it came to the Oaks Turf Classic Derby Pick 3 and the Oaks Derby Double. So instead of starting with the Derby, let's actually, and we also talked about the races, the grade ones that are part of the $2 two-day pick six, and a reminder that starts with the La Troyenne, 3 o'clock today, 3:03 post for the eighth. So the eighth and 11th today, that then ties in to Saturday's grade ones, the Derby City, this staff with Gamine, where acclimation is toward the single, and then the Churchill Downs, the Turf Classic, and the Derby. So there's your $2 pick six. Nick, instead, let's talk about races we did not discuss yesterday, and that includes the Distaff Turf Mile. The first stake tomorrow goes off at 1:14. Zafel 2-1, got Stormy 8-5, but there's a couple of options, I think, in there beside them.
I thought so too. I think that one of the better options, actually, this is a pretty telling situation, is that Jakarta is running at Belmont today. So she has not been scratched from the license fee, so she will not go in here. And that will have an impact because it's really, really going to help Blowout. Blowout ran a winning race on multiple occasions last year and had probably one of the better 0-for-3 campaigns you're going to find, including getting tagged on the wire by stablemate Viadera twice. In the Noble Damsel, she ran a hole in the wind. It was just such a difficult loss. Again, same situation in the Matriarch. This could be a very, very good spot for Blowout, given the way the pace will shake out now. They can have Got Stormy. I don't want any part of Got Stormy. This is a horse that's been campaigned just in an incredibly aggressive manner over the last few years, was all out to win a mile race at Gulfstream against inferior horses. Now suddenly she's going to run a little less frequently, which is probably intelligent. I don't have any interest in her beating what I think are real grade two caliber horses going two turns. I think Zofel will run better. I think She's Got You is actually a very good horse. I worry, of course, if the pace will be quick enough for her. But she ran winning race in the Athenia last time. She didn't get any pace to run at all. So she could have a little bit of the other Chad angle working. And I'll say that I was dismissive of New York Girl coming out of that endeavor, and she actually ran quite well in the Hillsboro. So she's a horse that I think is interesting too. So I thought it was a pretty wide open race, but I do believe that with Jakarta coming out, things really do look as if they'll be a little bit more in Blowout's favor.
Good, I hadn't latched on to the cross entry factor with Jakarta. Good job, Nick. I appreciate it.
Well, it's part of the 700 races I've looked at this week, so they're all starting to merge together in my mind. But we're getting a little separation as time goes by.
And on that topic, actually, that was some crazy sequence the way things turned out and played out yesterday in New York. You get three odds-on types that win, and you think, oh, this thing's going to pay $190, and then the wheels came flying off.
Yeah, it happened quickly. Now, once Hometown lost the seventh and Lost in Rome wired the field, you could see things turning a little bit, and Mr. Alec looked like a somewhat trustworthy favorite in the eighth, not one that I think you'd go out of your way to single. I didn't single him. But boy, Kinenos was tough to get to. It was one thing to maybe use Microsecond, see if he could wire the field, but there just hadn't been a good effort from Kinenos in quite a while. going all the way back basically to the end of his two-year-old season. So he stepped forward, and then, you know, the last was a grab bag, and we all knew it was going to be, it could be anybody. And I actually had tickets where I used, if you combined my tickets, I used every single horse in the field. So I also bet our destiny last time, which is about par, for him to come back and win it at over 30-1. And what I thought was a race that looked like it had way too much speed, and he understandably wired. First wire-to-wire winner of the meet on the Widener. Not surprising that the former $7,500 claimer from Wesley Ward hung late and ended up helping him go wire-to-wire. So it was actually, I didn't realize, and then somebody alerted me to it on Twitter, that there was going to be a 5 of 6 payoff as well. I did not have 5. So, but yeah, it paid $29,000. Being that it's a retail only, there was no late plunge. It only handled 200,000, which, you know, when you see if that's how it's going to go, there's going to be a positive expectation on that bet every time there's a carryover, because the CAWs are not putting in a gargantuan amount of money. So it actually ended up being about a 6% player's edge, which pretty tough to argue with that.
No, exactly, and I that was the number I thought. I, you know, 2.5-3 times. It might take a little bit of awareness, and you know, some billboarding to make people aware. Nick, I mean, it's been a while since we were doing this and had to, you know, really think through and you know, build tickets and so forth in a conventional pick six scenario. So I think it'll grow.
Right. And the dollar and the fact that yesterday was Thurby. I mean, if it was up to Naira, probably they would have preferred their first carryover be next Thursday when there's really no competition whatsoever. But yeah, I mean, I think it's also the price point's the big thing. I mean, when you've been playing these on a regular basis and been doing it at 20 cents, when you're doing it in a dollar, it's obviously a lot more difficult. But if you were smart and got aggressive with the first two legs and singled those two likely winners, then you ended up with the favorite, kind of course became the favorite at the buzzer, which bailed out a lot of people who had used the 4, who was going to end up being the favorite. You know, it was easy to be sitting pretty at 3 for 3 and then even use the fourth winner and be 4 for 4. I remember what that felt like. And then the last two legs happened, which is how it goes. Pick sixes are hard to hit, so you can't get too hung up on that.
Let's we've already we know about Gamine's presence. Pate Mile, this like the 8 Bells. I've heard. Let me look down. I've heard like 6 different answers in here with authority. What's your approach in the Pate Mile?
Well, you know, I love these races, and I alluded to it yesterday in talking about the 8 Bells. I love these races where connections have to finally take their medicine and cut their horses back. And everybody wants to have a classic distance horse, and they want to go long, and so on and so forth. But you know, this is going to be the first opportunity for a lot of these horses to go short again after a lot of tries at longer distances. This is generally a race that's run at a pretty strong early pace, too, because you'll get speed types that have gone long and now are cutting back. You know, it might be a little bit too aggressive, I guess, too cute, but I think Sitting on Go has been a one-turn horse all along, and I actually don't think he ran that badly last time, was out of position. This feels like a horse who's just supposed to be able to lay back and make one run, and so I'm encouraged to see if maybe he's been training a little bit better, because I think he's going to be a big price, and he's going to get some pace to run at late. There's no doubt that Jackie's Warrior now, with this having become his new target, is very dangerous. But you know, one thing about Jackie's Warrior that made him so good last year is that he obviously was a lot more developed than his competition and the fellow members of his generation. He was just much farther along when they were all coming to hand, and one of the things that made him so good is that he could sprint clear of everybody early, and that's just not going to be the case in here. That there's real other speed. You have a horse like Prevalence who's probably not going to be that far off of him, that has a lot of talent. 3-2 zone has to be ridden aggressively from the rail, so you'd expect that he'll be forwardly placed as well. I don't see how Dream Shake could be too far back. And then the real speed is outside with Dreamer's Disease, Noble Reflection, and to a slightly lesser extent, Joe Frazier. So this feels like it's going to have a very strong pace. I'm going to use Sitting on Go along with a couple of others. Defunded, I'll use Prevalence as well, because I think he's a one-turn horse also, and try to get through the first leg of what should be a pretty... It's a fun and challenging pick 5, but I think one that's actually pretty approachable.
I don't know if you had a chance to hear Jay earlier at 10, but Jay has been vocal in critiquing the way Dale has handled Sit and On Go, and he just didn't understand, you know, the headbanging approach with him. And so he's of the same mind that now that they're refocusing, that the time is now. I've got to go back later today when I write. I'll be writing up the Saturday card after the show. And I've got to look at Defund It again. There's too many people with good opinions that are talking about Defund It. And I kind of glossed over him my first pass. I was more interested in Dream Shake than I was in Defund It. But
I think one of the things that you have to be thinking if you like Defund It is that the rail was good on Santa Anita Derby Day. And if you believe that, then you like Defunded because he was wide much of the way, and he's probably a horse that's going to be a little bit more effective around one turn also. I mean, that's the angle that you're playing on all these horses. So I think there's a – that's kind of my anti-Rock Your World stance, is that I think that he kind of ended up in the lightning lane in his dirt debut, and that went a long way towards helping him get around there. So I think that's part of definitely a big part of the angle with Defunded.
The American Turf. We haven't. You and I haven't talked about the American Turf yet at all, actually. And we created this crazy BIC four, and this is the anchor leg with the two 3 year old races, the Pat Day Mile, and this for the boys on the grass. And this race has gotten not nearly the attention it deserves, Nick.
Yeah, you got that right. This is an absolutely terrific race. And, you know, you kind of felt like watching that Transylvania, that if all of those horses plus a few came back for the American Turf, it would be a really terrific race. And this is a good race year in and year out. I mean, it feels like there's been virtually no exceptions to that. It should be, I mean, if this race doesn't have a fast pace, then I just completely give up, because you've got Baffert Speed, you've got a horse like Holy Vow, who's had a ton of speed. Next has a lot of speed down towards the inside. Of course, the I guess highest profile speed horses are Went From Within an excellent timing, stretching out. So yeah, again, I mean, if this thing is not very fast, then I'll throw my hands up in the air. I wish Palazzi had drawn a better post. I still have to bet him because I believe he's a very talented horse, and I thought he ran very well in the Transylvania. You know, if he had maybe you reversed the trips, he would have won, just like Scarlet Sky did. You wanted to make the last move that day, given the way the race unfolded. So I like Palazzi. I'm going to use both he and Scarlet Sky for sure. I'm not going to be beaten by Win From Within because he does look like a very talented horse. I thought that Hidden Enemy was a little interesting second off the layoff. I know that the competition is quite a bit tougher, but this is a horse that Asmussen campaigned as if he thought he had a good bit of talent. So I think there's something there that you can latch onto a little bit. Dynamite actually ran a couple of very good races at Sam Houston and Fairgrounds for Keith DeSormo. Yeah, this is kind of a long shot situation for that barn. And then I guess, you know, the other horse that I'm not a particularly big fan of, but it seems foolish to be beaten by Annex. So he got a very good setup two back when Irad let a horse run off and set up in an insane pace and just laid back. Junior Alvarado laid back to make that one run. And then last time he beat an inferior field the way he was supposed to. So, yeah, it's. I mean, but you want to talk about a race where you can really make a case for six or seven of them. This is absolutely it.
Yeah, it's a fun group, and you know, this is a rare. I mean, you mentioned the Baffert Speed, a rarity. First of all, that that Jill Baffert and Debbie Lanny, that Donato and Bob even bought this Temple City Colt. And this is different than the usual Jill Baffert horses. It seems like Bob has bought her some horses at an unlimited budget. So this is a little bit more than they've bought, and they've actually, Bob's had some minor stake winners, for Jill, and, this horse has done very little wrong. Even that try on the dirt, it got beat by Roman Centurion. This horse is all right. And, even though he wired last time, I don't necessarily think that he's a horse that has to be, you know, put on the engine.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's certainly been effective from a little bit off of it. The horse worked 10-1 at the sale last year. This was actually this horse was consigned by Joe Applebaum's off the hook. So I don't know exactly how this shook out. This feels like maybe there was a client that this horse was supposed to go to that ended up not wanting him or something. Because it is odd when a trainer and a bloodstock agent's wife end up owning a horse, basically. But hey, I mean, it doesn't matter at this point because the horse has talent and has ability. Yeah. And I agree with what you're saying, that he certainly doesn't need to be on the lead, which makes him very dangerous. I think Flavian Pratt is sort of interestingly positioned to have a very big weekend with some of the horses that he's slated to ride. And I think the rest of the country is going to be pretty hip to the fact that Flavian Pratt is extremely talented by the end of the weekend.
There's a lot of fun horses in here, and I, you know, my first inclination was Palazzi, and I in the back of my mind I heard Hammer's longtime, you know, moniker of don't worry about the post, just if the horse has merit. You know, there's actually a funny horse in here that's going to be a monster price, and would have to, and this sort of fits what we talked about. Regarding the second race winner of Dallas's. And by the way, Australasia, who, as we brought up with Marcus Hirsch yesterday, was a slam dunk in here. Australasia wins and wins clear in the third race for Brad Cox, and a very nice Louisiana bred. There's a horse in here that I put my first pass, I put a dollar sign by, which is my way of reminding myself that, you know, there's a price in here. Michael Ann Ewing, and granted she's winless on the year, but she can train, and she knows what she's doing. She's got Barrister Tom in here, who was a winner at Kentucky Downs in that juvenile last year, and came back and ran a very solid race in his 3-year-old debut. It's an Artie Schiller gelding. And he's 30-1, is going to be every bit of that, Nick, and doesn't have to improve much second off the layoff, second time as a 3-year-old, to impact this race, and is going to be one of the longest shots on the board.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't make any strong argument against anybody in here. I think there's a lot to like about a variety of different horses. So I would say definitely include him if your budget allows. You know, the horse immediately he was outside, Holy Vow, who's 30-1 as well. I mean, this horse obviously comes from what looked like pretty humble beginnings, but he ran 2 bang-up races at Sam Houston before running second in the Bayou City, and that was a very good effort as well. The problem that he'll run into, of course, is pace-related. But, yeah, I mean, it's a fun race to take a few horses and fool around in the try or play some exactas or something in addition to the multi-race bets, because it's going to be challenging to get through it, of course, in the multis. You're going to have to utilize every advantage we have along the way, which is hopefully a single early on in that pick six with Gamine. But, yeah, it's very, very, very challenging.
You talked as part of the grade one two-day pick six. You told people Fat Man, Flagstaff, Tap It to Win, Sha Sha, Shake Me Up, Whitmore Bango endorsed. Nick, can you drill that down for those that are either going to play the 2-day pick six, where, you know, the budget is obviously going to get a constraint? Maybe prioritize those top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean, if I could have 3 of those, I would take. I would take Whitmore endorsed and Tap It to Win. So I would boil it down to those 3, and I know people are going to think, why endorsed but not Fat Man? And I did say yesterday that I felt like Fat Man has run, and maybe they were a little bit circumstantial, but he ran 2 very dull races at Gulfstream without Lasix. So I'm very concerned that, you know, 7-year-old gelding that for 30 of his 32 career starts has been on Lasix could have a problem handling not having it. So that's why I would probably relegate him more to a second-tier type of slot. And Flagstaff, to me, is just, if he's very solid, he's obviously been very productive and seems to know his way to the wire, but he's nothing special. He's been running a bunch of mid-90s buyers. I mean, the good sprinters over time would have absolutely laughed at Flagstaff. So why not take horses that have a little bit of upside to me, like Tappet to Win, who came through on what really wasn't an ideal rail last time, and endorsed, who I thought, with the trouble he ran into, actually ran extremely well, went second to Fat Man. And, you know, Whitmore might be better at six furlongs. I'm not completely sure that's the case. He didn't have things go his way in the Count Fleet. CZ Rocket got the clear outside trip. Ricardo Santana committed to the rail, I think, with a bit better trip on the outside. He can be dangerous, and I actually think a slower-paced race might work in his favor.
Nick, similarly, when we talked about the Turf Classic, Count again, Colonel Liam, and domestic spending for you, and which certainly makes sense. When I built... Oh, well, thank you. Samantha Siegel correcting me. I assumed that Debbie... thank you. I appreciate that, Sam. Thank you. And congratulations to Samantha. A new thing will be trumpeting going forward is that Samantha Siegel and Paul McGee win a race Derby week. I'm going to do the research when I get home. Keep an eye out for that. The group in the Turf Classic, when I made the pick three play last night, Nick, I found myself having to use Master of Foxhounds down inside.
You know,
dangerous, no?
Yeah, it's you know, the problem I have with horses like this is that stretching turf horses out, especially Euro types that come over, is generally a white flag on more classic distances, in my opinion, generally. But there are a lot of rules like that that have been broken consistently over the last few years, and so I probably shouldn't take too much of a hardline approach with that, because this is a horse who's clearly improved throughout his time with Richard Baltus. And, you know, and guys like Baltus and Sadler and D'Amato having strings in Kentucky has definitely made them a lot more proficient when it comes to these kind of cards. And it used to be that, you know, people that looked at East Coast turf racing a lot or Midwest turf racing were dismissive of West Coast horses. And that's just not the case anymore, in part because these guys just aren't exclusively West Coast trainers. So, I mean, I love Count Again, and I've been looking forward to this race for quite some time. I would not make an argument against anybody who believes that Smooth Like Straight could potentially wire this field. I think Colonel Liam is overrated, is generally my opinion. Colonel Liam actually has a lot of the same characteristics of a horse like Maxfield. The difference is that Maxfield is facing basically the same type of horses he's been beating over and over. Colonel Liam is facing significantly better horses than he's run against in his last two starts. And you can put a label on the Pegasus race and act like it's one of the greatest races of all time because that's how it's marketed. But it's not, right? It's a January turf race. And it's a January turf race where most of the good turf horses in this country are on the shelf. So he beat up what lined up. He did so with an excellent trip. He faced a very, very weak field at Fairgrounds. Domestic Spending and Count Again and Smooth Like Straight, these are real turf horses. These are good turf horses. I was actually hoping that Gouffo would be in this race too, but Ivar is a very good horse. Digital Age is a very talented horse. Ride a Comet has gotten very good now in the last 6 months or so. So this looks to me like a really tough spot in that respect. I don't love the way the race is going to set up for Count Again's purposes, because it does look like Smooth Like Straight will dictate terms on the front end. But he just ran so well into the teeth of an extremely slow pace. I have to take him at what will probably be a better distance for him when push comes to shove, with a jockey that's likely to get him a little bit more involved early. And I'm not saying that Saya should really push him to go forward, but he should definitely be closer to the pace. And that might really be all it takes, because he's going to be, if he closes with that same kind of kick, I mean, he's going to be hurt from in the stretch.
Gets us for some final Derby thoughts. And Nick, you know, we talked similarly yesterday in terms of coverage on you know, the 2 day ticket, Known Agenda, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon, Dynamic One, and Essential Quality. And I'm pretty much in that same mindset. What I'd love for you to do, we got time because it looks like Satish is tied up in a meeting, and Duke too. So unfortunately, no Duke and no Satish. And we'll wrap up with just Dave Grenick right at the end of the show. What I'd love for you to do is explain to people how they build a cost-effective, let's say maybe a Derby Tri or yeah, Derby Tri actually probably good for 50 cents. I mean, show people how to approach this using the horses you like.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your opinion, first of all, but I've always, as far as trifectas go, I mean, I'm a wheel guy. I'm not somebody who makes trifecta boxes. I don't think you can be effective long-term in terms of hitting trifecta boxes and make money doing that. So what I generally have done in the Derby and had some success over time is take a price horse, key them in the trifecta with the logical horses. So, you know, the ones that I laid out yesterday that I think have win chances, now, let's say you, amongst those you like Dynamic One best. You key a horse like Dynamic One, and you play a try that looks something like 11 with 1, 8, 9, 10, 14. With, you know, I'm not a big proponent of using all in the Derby because it feels like you're going to end up with three or four horses on your ticket that you just don't really have any vision of them finishing in the money. So you go through and pick those horses out and use the other 14 or so. And, you know, forever, if you're doing a 50-cent ticket, that's a $30 play. If you're playing one horse over five horses over 14 horses, for example, and that's a realistic way of hitting it. And believe me, full disclosure, I'm a notoriously terrible Derby bettor. So, I mean, if you want to ask me about a 40 maiden claim or a Belmont on a Thursday, I probably have a better shot of telling you how to make money there. But it's a race where because you have the board is pretty wide open, you know, barring what's going to happen with our friend Mattress Mac, you're going to have a lot of value there. You have a lot of value, obviously, in the exotics with the field size. So that's why you want to get involved in those. But, I mean, the best Derby trifecta I hit was in 2017, and I keep looking at Lee. I keep looking at Lee and one other horse who I thought would be making up ground, used all of the logical horses, used about 16 horses in third, and, of course, one of them was Battle of Midway. So that's the best way to do it, in my opinion. Now, if you have an opinion that maybe is you like essential quality and then you like a couple of price horses, and there are only about 10 or 12 horses that can run in the money, then you play something like a 3x3x12, and you're going to spend the same $30 for every 50 cents on that. And even if you do, you make two or three of those kind of wheels, you're spending less than $100, you're putting yourself in position to hit and make money, because basically the only way you can't lose money if you hit, if you're using essential quality with a couple of price horses and one of them has to be in the money with him. I mean, essential quality, whomever, and Dynamic One is still a $100 try for 50 cents. So just because of the nature of this field and the size of it and everything else. So I think you want to take your opinion and obviously tailor it to the race itself and bet accordingly. So I would say that, of course, again, if you're looking to make trifecta wheels, narrow them down, don't use all. If you're somebody that has virtually no opinion whatsoever, then you want to go into it and be as cautious as possible, but don't waste money. And obviously if you also on that topic, of course, from a wagering perspective, if you like a horse in this race to win, that's not named essential quality, you need to plan on making a win bet. Because one thing that's going to happen that we've just never dealt with before in the history of this race is that a wager is going to be made on the favorite that's so sizable that everybody else's price is going to go up. I mean, to put this in perspective, if Mattress Mac had bet $2 million on Improbable and Maximum Security in 2019, Country House would have paid $8 more than he did. So that's the kind of impact that wager has, and you want to keep that in mind. So, you know, if you like Midnight Bourbon, granted he's been quite fancied and very talked about during the week because of his training, but you know he's a horse that's going to be 22-1 or so, right? And he might have been 18 or 19-1 otherwise, and you're going to get that value there. So you should be betting them to win. You should be playing the exotics that lead in the multiple day exotics, the exotics on the card itself, taking every opportunity you possibly can to get involved because the value that exists in this race is just it's unheard of as far as any other race in this country.
Well, and I don't think flashed early Derby numbers yet? I have not seen it. If they have,
the first flash I saw, Hot Rod Charlie was 9-2, and he was the favorite. So obviously, the wager has not come in yet. I don't believe that there will be a bet today. So I don't I think we'll get, you know, you'll have probably pretty conventional odds throughout the day. And you'll get a sense of who might be the horses that are taking a little bit of money. I joked last night that King Fury might be this year's My Boy Jack. My Boy Jack was always hovered around 7 or 8 to 1 in 2018, and nobody still to this day can figure out why, other than maybe a lot of affinity for the name Jack. But I thought maybe King Fury would be that with Tyson Fury coming to the race and a lot of popularity in that respect. So yeah, I don't think we'll see anybody. Actually, the one thing I did notice was this was very, very early wagering. Known Agenda was 12 to 1, which makes me wonder if the rail is going to scare people away. And I think his price might end up being, you know, he's a single digit on the morning line that now looks like he could end up being a double digit odds going into the gate. So it feels like there's also over time, Todd Pletcher horses that were supposed to take money in the Derby and didn't, well, they have a notoriously terrible record, which is no great surprise. But I don't know that that's because of anything other than people sort of condemning or really downgrading his chances because of the inside draw.
Well, and we talked about that earlier this morning, too, and that, you know, he becomes a little bit even more attractive under that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, at 12 to 1 or so, if you're talking about, you know, Hot Rod Charlie being 5 or 6 to 1 and Rock Your World being around the same price, I mean, at that point, you have to be using Known Agenda. There's really no reason not to. That's a square price on him. And again, I mean, you're talking about a horse that has run effectively being inside. You have a rider who's extremely comfortable being inside. So I don't think that should scare anybody off very significantly. And looking at some of those overhead images of what the gate setup is like now versus the old auxiliary gate, it's not a big worry at all. The rail is much ado about nothing. And there's this big aversion in racing to the inside right now, too. It's like, and everybody, the other thing that I find hilarious is that everybody talks about how perfectly speed horses are drawn when they have the 10 or the 12. It's like, really? I don't believe that one bit. I don't find that to be a coherent argument at all. But let me be 4 or 5 wide as the outside speed, but God forbid I have the inside and either dictate to everybody else or sit right behind them in the pocket. I just don't get it. But Steve, funny, I could air grievances actually for so long, we'd be at next year's Derby already.
I know, it's funny. I do the same thing you did. You pick out the top 3 out of that group of 6.
I think in terms of what kind of value they're going to offer and how I'd like to bet them, I'm going to use Midnight Bourbon, Essential Quality, and Dynamic One. And I kind of key those in tries. And I'm thinking that Dynamic One's going to get a very good trip from just a little bit off of it. And, you know, the more I look through this race, the more I keep coming back to the idea that Essential Quality, while not flashy, not a flashy workhorse, not a particularly flashy horse in terms of earning speed figures, he's just very steady. And he seems like he'll be able to rise to the occasion regardless of what goes on around him. And so I would take those 3, and then I would play some additional trifectas and maybe exactas to an extent, and specifically use him over the best prices that I like. So
yeah.
Dynamic One, obviously, Midnight Bourbon, Keep Me in Mind is another one that I'm gonna use.
I think Keep Me
in Mind was badly compromised in his last 2 starts. He's a horse who I kind of laughed off at the end of his 2-year-old season, but now I actually find him to be somewhat interesting. He's going to be ridden, I think, with the idea being that he can get a share of it. And I think there's a lot of, it's actually a very smart approach because opportunity is going to be there to make up some ground late with the pace expected, and he fits that category.
Nick, the fabulous, I appreciate it. Good luck.
You bet, absolutely. Same to you. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, to wrap up, and Dave Grenig, we can't leave Louisville without an Oaks Day without a Dave Grenig send off. Dave, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
Excellent, Dave, with the Derby Advance today, and Dave, some final thoughts from you leading into tomorrow in the feature.
You know, to me, it's a pretty wide open race. Obviously Essential Quality is the legitimate favorite, but if it's not him, it could be about 7 or 8 different horses. And, there's been no one really has stood out, at least from my perspective, in terms of their training that said, put up a sign that said, you need to bet me. There's been some nice works and some horses that have looked good, but nothing that really just grabs you by the throat and says, I'm the one.
who was the one that you turned in to the company?
Well, I wound up going with Known Agenda, Rail Be Damned, for a couple of reasons. I think he has looked good. You know, he's one of the, you know, six or seven that have looked, steady and consistent. The blinkers obviously have moved him up. His Florida Derby was solid in a big field of 11. And he's, I'm hoping the wild card is the rider, or the difference maker is the rider. I don't think there's anybody in the country riding better than Irad Ortiz right now. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who are riding very well, Saez, Rosario, et cetera. But I don't think anyone's got the touch that Irad has right now. And I'm hoping that this, the new gate set up with the one gate, 20 stall gate, and with the way Irad is just doing everything right, that, he can get away, get enough, get into the right position. And then I do think he's one of the ones that will like the mile and a quarter. He's got 4 mile and eighth races under his belt. The last two have been really, really good. And, from what I've seen, his training, he's by Curlin. They say that those are the ones that are supposed to get better as they get older. I know he's only 5 weeks older than he was when he won the Florida Derby, but, hoping a bunch of little things can make the difference.
Who are you using underneath?
Hot Rod Charlie has, he really was good when he ended his two-year-old season in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and his races this year have been solid, and I think he'll get into the mix. I don't think he has to be on the lead like he was in the Louisiana Derby. I think he'll sit a good trip off of Rocky World and or Medina Spirit. I have a lot of respect for Essential Quality, so instead of just throwing him out completely, I put him third. And sort of the one horse that's not really getting talked about too much because he got the quote-unquote perfect setup last time the Arkansas Derby is Superstock. I don't see why he won't get the potential solid setup here. His first race, he had a significant amount of traffic when he was second to Concert Tour. I'm sorry, he was fourth to Concert Tour, but without that traffic, he could have been second. And then he took a step forward, obviously, in the Arkansas Derby with a good setup. But I don't see why he wouldn't, take advantage of the extra distance and, the potential of a pace here. So he's sort of the long shot I have. And I would throw King Fury in there, but my issue with King Fury is he's had no races that are beyond a mile and 16th and only one race this year. It was a good race. And I would throw him in supers, but I don't know that I would put him in on the win category.
How about later today? Who's your Oaks pick?
I like Malathat. I think she's, I'm a little concerned with only the one race this year, but I think she got enough out of it. And I do think the mile and eighth, I don't know if she'll win the Kentucky Oaks. I'm pretty sure she'll win the Alabama. I don't, because I think she wants every bit of that mile and quarter. In fact, if there was a chance for her to get into this race today, I might have given her a glance at the Kentucky Derby. Tomorrow I might have given her a glance at the Kentucky Derby. But I think it has potential. I'm hoping for a potential for a big six-day period here for Todd Fletcher, or five-day, which will culminate next Wednesday when more than likely he'll be announced as an inductee into the Hall of Fame.
I added that angle in, too, at some point this week. Dave, thank you so much, as always.
Steve, terrific job this week, and we'll see you back home.
Thanks so much. Dave Grenning, everybody. DRF Grenning and DRF Privman earlier this morning, as well as Kevin Kirstein and Papo for Form to Win, and Nick Tamaro, of course, Jimmy Ventura and Hammer, and Scully with the analysis, kind of bookending with Nick. Podcast will be up quick. Casey with a great job yesterday getting out the Oaks Day preview early. And thanks to everybody for tuning in. Play the Big Four contest. You got until 2 o'clock until the Edgewood. Thanks to Churchill. Thanks, of course, to Healthnetics and Thorograph and Hill and Dale and everybody that makes it possible. Naira Betts, Twinspires weekend preview as well, right here at Churchill Downs. And we'll recap it starting on Monday. It's going to be fun. I think I'm putting Midnight Bourbon on top. That's what I'll send you off on. Talk to you Monday, everybody. Good luck.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.